Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
How about this? Congressional staffers now have the right to unionize. America's workers are waking up, so says the number two man at the AFL-CIO. And today on the show, protecting our workforce, the role of national cash, and the latest from the United Auto Workers. Welcome to the Thursday, May 12th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on at least six platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. Melissa Moriarty is going to be our first guest on the show today, and she is the communication director of NCOSH, National COSH, nationalcosh.org is their website. And over the years, you probably heard me talk about this organization. They are a group that engages with workers to help them build workplaces that are safe and healthy. What good is a workplace if it's not safe? If you go in the morning and you don't come out at the end of the day, there's something wrong with that workplace. Turns out that National COSH has a network of groups in 23 states, and they essentially connect workers in their respective states with the right labor, community, and legal resources to position them to win decent, just working conditions. And this year, and she's going to talk about this in detail, they launched an initiative called Worked Up, where they speak directly with workers who want to share with the public of why they're worked up in their workplace. You know, there's a lot of people that are worked up right now. Workers in any sector can submit selfie videos or written submissions of what's not working in their workplace and why they are fed up with it. And usually, says Melissa, these stories contain aspects of how they are fighting back. So we'll get into details on that. We're also going to run down the Dirty Dozen, and I talked about this a couple weeks ago when we commemorated Workers Memorial Day, which every year is April 28th. That is the date when the Occupational Safety and Health Administration started 50-some years ago. And Amazon is on that list, six dead at a Bessemer warehouse. And their injury rates, more than twice the industry average. It's pretty much a sweatshop in those warehouses. This one, too, I remember talking about this a couple of weeks ago. Ernst Nursery and Farms, this is out of St. Paul, Oregon, where a farm worker died during a heat wave, and the company told OSHA that the employee should be accountable for how they pushed their body. It's his fault that he stayed out there so long. Hilton Hotels, nationwide service cuts, creating safety risks for workers and guests. Here's another one. Lyax Cleaners. Wash Supply, this is a laundromat in New York City. Zero COVID safety protocols. No ventilation. No protection from toxic chemicals. The company shut its facility and fired all the workers. You may recall the tornado that hit Mayfield, Kentucky. This was the end of last year, I believe. Maybe it was December. Nine people died when the company told the workers, stay on the job. Don't worry about this tornado coming. It's crazy. It's happening. They do another survey called Killed at Work. The Dirty Dozen, that's the unsafe employers. And they released this right before Memorial Day, Workers' Memorial Day, called Killed at Work. And we'll run all of that down with Melissa Moriarty as the communication director for National COSH. Their website, nationalcosh.org. Josh Nasser, on behalf of the United Auto Workers, will be joining us later in the show. And last time we had him on, he was previewing the legislative agenda, and we'll get into that. We'll talk about the Supreme Court. We'll talk about inflation and the upcoming midterm elections. And I want to tell you, UAW is not alone. There's a lot of organizing going on, and I just want to salute the academic student employees in Washington that came together to form a union with the UAW. We're talking about 1,600 teaching assistants, research assistants, tutors, graders, and more, all across all campuses and extension centers of Washington State University, WSU. They filed their representation petition with the state, and they are seeking recognition for their union, which will be the WSU Coalition of Academic Student Employees. And they'll be joining many of their colleagues throughout the country who have formed student worker unions. The UAW has been exceptional on this. I know they fought really hard at Harvard some years ago. And in fact, we've had several guests on the show talking about that. But literally tens of thousands of people have been organized at college campuses because of the UAW. And the UAW is saluting a huge investment in batteries. And I mentioned this about a week ago, and there was an announcement with the Secretary of Energy and Debbie Dingell. Debbie is a representative in Michigan, home of the UAW. And they talked about this investment of more than $3 billion to build a domestic battery supply chain with high-quality jobs. Huge step. And this is part of the bipartisan infrastructure law. All good things happening with the UAW. Good things happening in Washington when it comes to organizing. The House of Representatives has cleared the way for congressional staffers to unionize. That's right. As lawmakers approved a resolution, it was House Resolution 1096, to confirm the right of staffers to unionize. Now, technically, the lawmakers did not vote directly on the resolution, but rather voted on a larger package of rules guiding floor debate for other legislation. That's pretty typical. So when they passed that, they passed the right to unionize. Now, staffers and lawmakers must begin to work out the mechanics of what the bargaining units will look like and which workers can unionize. The Office of Congressional Workplace Rights will need to clarify the latter, which could lead to an office-by-office union effort, resulting in a patchwork of union and non-union offices. And when it comes to bargaining, you have to understand something here. Federal law prohibits federal employees from negotiating on benefits in statute like health care and retirement. However, they will be able to negotiate over promotion, discipline, vacation, sick days, and other numerous issues. These staffers work crazy hours, too. Keep that in mind. When you're in the political arena, it's almost 24/7. So this is definitely going to be interesting with the unions being involved here. There is still debate as to whether staffers can bargain over their salaries. And now the Senate, this is all in the House, the Senate will have to adopt a resolution to see if their staff members are going to organize. Last week, it was a week ago today, that worker organizers met with President Biden at the White House to share the challenges and successes that they encountered fighting alongside their colleagues to form unions. Well, in an interview with The Hill, Fred Redmond, Secretary Treasurer and Executive Vice President of the AFL-CIO, who we feature on the show every month, called what's happening at companies like Amazon and Starbucks a sign of better days ahead for workers. This is what Fred told The Hill. The White House visit in itself shows that every worker who is in a union and every worker who is thinking of organizing their workplace has an ally in the highest office of the country. Fred went on to say, as we are continuing to recover from this pandemic, what we're finding is an entire workforce that is waking up to the realization that they deserve better. Fred Redmond, number two man in the AFL-CIO. Good guy. Steelworker since 1973. And again, if you miss a show, I have to plug our website here. It's been revamped. And it was shut down yesterday because so many people are going to the website. We appreciate that. AWFpodcast.com. AWFpodcast.com. You can still get it at AWFradio.com. But Fred's interview was last Friday on the show. In the meantime, Bloomberg News is reporting that the National Labor Relations Board sued Starbucks Corporation in federal court. Why? To force the company to reinstate seven union supporters who were fired from a store in Memphis, Tennessee, because of their support for unionization. Since being fired, the workers who call themselves the Memphis Seven have taken part in protests in Memphis and Seattle and have met with lawmakers to discuss the growing union campaign sweeping through Starbucks stores across the U.S. Workers United, an affiliate of SEIU that is petitioning to represent staff at hundreds of stores. They have filed dozens of unfair labor practice charges against the company with the labor board, most of which are still pending. And one more here, dealing with apprenticeships. The U.S. Department of Labor, headed by Marty Walsh, has announced a funding opportunity of $3.4 million for up to 9 grants to attract and keep women in registered apprenticeship programs and industries where they are underrepresented. We're talking manufacturing, infrastructure, cybersecurity, and healthcare. The Women in Apprenticeship and Non-Traditional Occupations Grant Program supports community-based organizations in their efforts to recruit, train, and retain more women in registered apprenticeships and non-traditional occupations. Now, listen to this. While women make up nearly half the U.S. labor force, they comprise only 13% of registered apprentices. That's pretty low. And when you think about the money you can make eventually once you complete that program, hopefully this is going to bring more females and especially women of color. We always say it's a pathway to the middle class, especially when you get in the trades. The registered apprenticeships are a pathway for workers, says the Labor Department, to middle class jobs. They also help employers to recruit, develop, and retain a highly skilled and diverse workforce. While this earn while you learn model has a long history in the skilled trades such as construction, emerging and high growth industries like manufacturing, infrastructure, cybersecurity, and healthcare are increasingly using that same kind of program to strengthen their workforce. We've often said what they do in the trades is the gold standard. So obviously, Mr. Walsh, Marty Walsh, is taking that plan, that structure that's in place that works so well, and continuing it to other industries, manufacturing, cybersecurity. Good stuff. We're talking $3.4 million in funding to attract women into that sector. All right, we have to break. When we come back, we're going to check in with National Kosh, protecting workers. That's coming up next.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Hire union musicians. Call Music Talent of Cleveland at 216-881-1802. Call Music Talent of Cleveland as your dependable source for professional musicians in Northeast Ohio. Union musicians add harmony to weddings, elegance to parties, and uplifting music for all events. Music Talent of Cleveland contracts solo and ensemble musicians as well as bands and orchestras for single engagements. So hire union musicians. Call Music Talent of Cleveland today. 216-881-1802.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy,
and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle AWF Union Podcast. AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the North Coast Labor Federation. Before we join our first guest, I want to do a shout out here for Red Cross workers. They are being abused. And I want to mention the solidarity that's going on this week around the country. Members of 10 different unions are holding nationwide mobilization events this week in their effort to win a fair contract with the American Red Cross. The workers there, who make essential blood drives happen, say they are being mistreated by their employer. Red Cross managers are proposing to roll back health care benefits for thousands of employees, and they are refusing to address dangerous understaffing. The workers are contending that these conditions significantly contribute to the nation's blood shortage crisis because the Red Cross treatment of workers makes it difficult to retain trained, dedicated staff. I don't know what's going on here, but something's got to happen. So actions are being held this week in Hartford, Connecticut, Lansing, Michigan, Peoria, Illinois, San Diego, in California, Washington, D.C., and the unions include, listen to this lineup, AFSCME, the Steelworkers, IBEW, United Food and Commercial Workers, United Auto Workers, American Federation of Teachers, the Operating Engineers, the CWA, and the Office of Professional Employees and SEIU. So hopefully these mobilization efforts will get the managers at the Red Cross to wake up and do something and keep the workers in the middle of a blood shortage and a blood crisis in America. And this has been going on since the pandemic started a couple of years ago. All right, let's go to line number one. And joining us from the Boston area is Melissa Moriarty, and she is the communications manager for a great organization, which I have cited many times on this show, National Kosh. The website is nationalkosh.org, and it's all about worker safety. If workers aren't safe at work, come on. What good is that job? What good is that job? And when you call attention to unsafe working conditions, we all hope that they will be corrected immediately, if not sooner. Hey, Melissa, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me, Ed.
So this organization has been around for like 50 years. Why don't you give us your perspective? I know you've been involved there with communications for the last year, and you had a lot of events. So I want to get into the Dirty Dozen, the Killed at Work thing, and also you got this new initiative you want to talk about, Worked Up. But talk to me a little bit about the history of the organization, and maybe you can even touch on some of your accomplishments. Go ahead.
Thank you. Yes. So Kosh, National Kosh has groups in 23 states, and we connect workers in those respective states to the right labor, community, and legal resources to position workers to really to win the fights that they're trying to win. This year, we launched an initiative with a group of partners, including other unions, called Worked Up. And we speak directly to workers who want to share with the public why they're worked up, basically, in their workplace. A lot of the stories fall under how workers are underpaid, underprotected, and overworked. And workers in any sector can submit selfie videos or written submissions or however they feel comfortable telling their story of what's not working in their workplace. And a lot of these stories contain aspects of how they're fighting back. So that's always really encouraging. Some of our successes this year, we released the 2022 Dirty Dozen report, which names America's 12 unsafest employers, and we released a database called Killed at Work, which is a partial catalog of fatalities starting from 2014. And it's an interactive map as well, so users can click on and find out some of the stories of some of the people who have been killed at work. And really, it's the first of its kind. To the best of our knowledge, we're not aware that a database like this exists. So we're really excited and honored to be able to continue to remember workers beyond just Workers' Memorial Day.
Sure, sure. Now, are you at all affiliated with the Occupational Safety and Health Administration? Because and they probably collect a lot of this data, right?
Correct, they do. And a lot of our research did come from some of their data as well. But there's a lot of deaths that fall outside of their jurisdiction, particularly during COVID. Not every worker who died of COVID because they got it at work is being remembered as a worker killed at work. We do work with OSHA and kind of help keep them, help hold them accountable. Obviously, a lot of the topics that they cover, we cover as well. But our focus is definitely from a worker rights angle.
Melissa, you mentioned that you have a network of KOSH groups in 23 states. Now, is that growing? I mean, did you obviously start with one state? You got to 23. Do you plan to get to all 50? What's the process here?
Yeah, we would love to get to all 50. And of course, it's definitely growing. If people want to start a KOSH group and in a state where there currently is one that doesn't exist, we would love to work with those individuals to help that get started.
I gotcha. Good. Okay. Just go to nationalkosh.org, and I would imagine there would be information. If a state is not affiliated with your organization, there would be information there
exactly.
On how they can. Okay. I gotcha. Okay. Let's get into this Worked Up campaign. This has really piqued my interest here. And everybody's got, you know, smartphones today, just about. And talk to me about that. You just started that. Did it take off right away, and how many did you get? And maybe you could share some of those comments with us. What's the story there?
Yeah, absolutely. So in February, we launched Worked Up with some of our partners. They include, you know, Badass Teachers Association, the National Nurses Union, a new group that will at least listen to us called Strippers United, and a whole range of other groups. And what we did was have those groups, workers, send stories to us. So those stories could be in the form of videos or written submissions. And otherwise, I would take the time to connect with those workers and interview them over Zoom so they can really tell me their story. And, you know, we have gotten a really encouraging response. People want to share the injustices of their workplace. They want to talk about how they're being exploited. So we post these videos on our social media feed, on Twitter and Facebook particularly, with the hashtag WorkedUp. And, you know, these videos and stories have gotten a lot of traction, thousands and thousands of views. We've received like hundreds of submissions. So every week we try to churn out new content so viewers and our followers can see what the issues are in America's workplace. We've received stories from teachers, nurses, a group of strippers in California that just recently announced that they are unionizing, housekeepers, you know, the job titles run the full gamut. And we launched a website in conjunction with this called workedup.us that, you know, features some of those stories, and we're always adding more. In addition to that, we're partnering with worker rights groups, including, of course, unions, to help support their online campaigns and driving our network over to sign those campaigns, petitions and such.
That's cool. This really took off. WorkedUp.us is the website, and you can see a bunch of people talking about their jobs. Did I hear you say that some strippers in California also participated in this initiative of yours. Is that right?
Yes, absolutely. And they were one of our most viewed video stories. They are a group of women who have endured terrible working conditions at a club in North Hollywood, California, called Star Garden. Everything from sexual assault to unsanitary working conditions. And after a while, they decided to group together and not put up with it anymore, and really are embodying the spirit of the labor movement. And just a few days ago, they announced that they are unionizing, and that's really exciting. We helped them with our SoCal Cash group in California to file OSHA complaints, in addition to featuring their story and their petition campaign on workedup.us.
What a great idea. This is awesome. Now, those of you listening, we have a pretty strong union audience, and with a union, you have protections, but there are so many people that do not have that benefit in America. So this is a great idea. If something is going wrong at work, you don't feel you're being protected, you need to go to that website, workedup.us. Check it out and take part in this and speak out. I mean, squeaky wheel gets the oil. That's how it works. Melissa Moriarty joining us on our live line today. She is the communications manager for National Cosh. NationalCosh.org is the main website. Later in the show, we're going to be checking in with the UAW. Josh Nasser will be joining us. He is the legislative director. Back in a few minutes.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's L-I-U-N-A.
America's Workforce is being brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America.
America's Workforce Radio is sponsored in part by the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 6, representing painters, glazers, drywall finishers, and sign and display industry workers. They remind you that belonging to a union is your right as an American.
We're the nurses, firefighters, and claims representatives that help keep our government services running. We respond to natural disasters. We care for our nation's veterans. And we investigate discrimination in the workplace. We are federal and D.C. government workers, and we are proud to serve the American people. Working in more than 70 agencies across the government, we know we can fulfill our mission because our union has our back. Learn more at AFGE.org. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees, AFL-CIO.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at BoydWatterson.com.
To Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And don't forget, you can check us out on at least six platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. And when you get an opportunity, just sign up, receive our shows on a regular basis, and give us a rating. We always appreciate those five-star ratings, so keep them coming. Let's go back to Boston right now. Joining us on our live line is Melissa Moriarty, and she is the communications manager for National Cosh. This is the National Council for Occupational Safety and Health. You've heard me talk about them on the show many, many times, especially around Workers' Memorial Day, when they come out with their Dirty Dozen Unsafe Employers. And prior to that, they release Killed at Work, naming those who died on the job. And they had a list from 2021 and 2022. Melissa, 2020, 2021. Were bad years with this pandemic, and you kind of referenced this in the first segment of the show. I imagine it's kind of difficult with COVID, and you know, you obviously there's an accident at work, an iron worker falls, a policeman is killed, firefighter burned up in a fire. I mean, these are pretty pretty well, they're not, they are common to a degree, but you know how they died. With COVID, there's a little variant there. I'm just wondering, are we trying to sort all that out in the last couple of years? And those who, I mean, we know how many people died from COVID, but how many of them died because of their working conditions? Are we able to unwind that right now?
Well, certainly National Kosh is trying to, and the database that you referenced, Killed at Work, does try to delineate between, you know, COVID-related deaths at work as a result of workers not having adequate protections, or being forced to work in unsafe environments that expose them later to COVID, and then, you know, delineating that between preventable deaths in, say, construction sites, or, you know, recently, last year, there was the case of the candle factory in Mayfield, Kentucky, where workers heard alarms of a tornado warning and were not allowed to leave. Their managers told them they would risk losing their jobs if they left. So they died in the candle factory as a result of the tornado passing through because they couldn't leave when they wanted to. So it features stories like that. You know, the reason people die at work really runs the gamut, and all of them are preventable.
Now, let's talk about the Dirty Dozen. When did you start doing the Dirty Dozen? And I think that's a great reference to the unsafe employers. And we know there's definitely more than a dozen out there. And maybe you could get into how they make that list. How does that happen, Melissa?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we have anyone can nominate a potential Dirty Dozen employer, including workers themselves, unions, workers' rights groups. And, you know, with so much happening right now in America with workers fighting back and exposing their exploitative employers and trying to unionize, it was hard for us to just choose 12 employers this year that are unsafe. But a few weeks ago, we did release the 2022 Dirty Dozen report that names the 12 unsafest employers in the U.S., and during Worker Memorial Week, we held a press conference where we invited workers from five of those named companies to share their devastating stories with us.
Now, those workers that you invite, do they have any problems coming forward to talk about these? And are they still working at those companies that have the unsafe conditions?
That's a great question. The situations with the workers really run the gamut. So, for example, we had a worker from Amazon speak. She's still currently employed at Amazon. She speaks publicly and is not afraid to speak out. And so far, nothing has happened to her. We had a worker from Starbucks speak. She was one of the Memphis Seven who was fired for trying to unionize her Starbucks store. Recently, I was just following the Twitter feed yesterday, and it looks like those workers have gotten reinstated from what I could gather. The NLRB filed a suit a few days ago demanding that Starbucks reinstate these workers. So it looks like their story have, you know, on its way to a happy ending. And so some of the workers have been fired. Some of the workers are still there. You know, the list really runs the gamut.
Now, I'm just wondering, once you expose them, and I also want to talk what kind of media play you got on these when you announced the Dirty Dozen, because you're more or less shaming them. When you're kind of showing what's going on in their workforce, you're saying, you know, this is not a good place to work. Do they come back? Do the companies say, wait a minute, it's not like that. We've cleaned it up, or we plan to clean it up. What's the usual response when they make the list of the Dirty Dozen?
Yeah, you know, it's the same type of response that would happen if a whistleblower exposes them. You know, they release kind of these vanilla-like statements of how they do everything to ensure a positive work environment. Yeah, it's not a positive list to land on. It's certainly nothing to be proud of.
What about the media? Do you get a lot of media play when you come out with that list right before Workers' Memorial Day?
Yeah, absolutely. We invited the press to this event where the workers spoke from those companies. We got a lot of media hits on it, including some international press as well, since one of the things that National Kosh does really, really well is make all of their events, all of their reports, completely bilingual in Spanish and English. So it's really important to us to be able to reach that market, that Spanish-speaking market here in the U.S., and as a result, we ended up getting picked up in publications in other languages as well.
Well, it's good that you're doing this kind of thing, and you mentioned Starbucks and Amazon, and we know there's union drives going on there. Of course, there was a successful one in New York at the warehouse on Staten Island. So hopefully, once these conditions are exposed, the workers are going to try, well, they got to try to change the conditions, and in some cases, they're going to unionize, and we're seeing that happen in America. So I always say the needle's going in the right direction. We want to make sure it stays in the right direction. So it's all good stuff. Mm-hmm. It's casting a light on the unsafe conditions, and there are so many in the world today. And sadly, we don't have enough inspectors on the job, and I know this. I've been doing this show for years now, and it seems every year with a new administration, well, we just can't fund the Occupational Safety and Health Administration. And I've seen some statistics where there's like one inspector that would take like maybe over 150 years for them to come back to that plant. It's absolutely ridiculous. One more question here, too. I want to cast a light on the state of Arizona. And you mentioned this in one of your reports. Arizona is so bad. It's so bad when it comes to worker safety that the Occupational Safety and Health Administration out of Washington might take over the state agency. Are you involved? Is National Kosh involved in that if that does happen? What's the story there?
Well, we certainly support those efforts 100%. The group there is certainly not doing its job in protecting workers. So we support those efforts.
Okay, well, that's going to be a work in progress, no doubt about that. All right, Melissa, great job. Once again, I just want to backtrack a little bit and talk about your opportunity. Those of you listening right now, if there is something going on at work that is not right, unsafe conditions, you need to speak out. And National Kosh has the way to do that, workedup.us. Do check out that website, workedup.us. You can go there and see what people are saying about their respective workplaces. This just started a couple of months ago, and it's exploding. So definitely take advantage of that. Melissa, really good. Anything else you want to say for parting comments here?
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. And just reiterate that point again, if workers want to share their stories with us, workedup.us, or they can email me directly at melissa@nationalkosh.org.
Okay, national website, nationalkosh.org. Melissa, thank you so much for joining us, and please stay in touch, all right?
Thank you for having me.
All right, we're going to take a quick break here. When we come back, Josh Nasser on behalf of the United Auto Workers.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as healthcare and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.
The United Steelworkers of America represent over 70,000 workers in the state of Ohio. Steelworker members enjoy the benefits of some of the best contracts of any workers in the world. Many of your friends, neighbors, and relatives are members of one of the most effective democratic unions in our country. With the pressures unorganized workers are under in today's economy, you need to join them. So call the Steelworkers Organizing Office at 216-292-5683 or toll free at 1-800-443-3752.
A great union requires a reliable election system. Survey and Ballot Systems is a trusted election partner with more than 30 years of expertise in managing union elections. By partnering with SBS, your union can ensure it gets an auditable process and a high level of customer service. SBS is here to help you conduct your union vote securely, transparently, and with trust building always in mind. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
The United Auto Workers are one of the largest and most diverse unions in North America, with members in virtually every sector of the economy. Learn more about this proud sponsor of our program at uaw.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle AWF Union Podcast, AWF Union Podcast. By the way, check out our revamped website for America's Workforce. Just go to awfpodcast.com. You can still access it through awfradio.com. But check out awfpodcast.com. And it's coming up for 2 years now that we started podcasting this show, and it's exploded. And I'm happy to report we are in the top 10 to 15% when it comes to all podcasts in America. And there are many out there. There are many to sort through, no doubt about that. So we appreciate you checking us out here at America's Workforce. All right, let's go to line number two. Joining us from Washington right now, Josh Nasser, Legislative Director for the United Auto Workers, UAW.org is their website. Josh Nasser, how are we doing today, my brother?
Doing well. How about yourself?
Good, 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 good. Pretty warm weather in northeastern Ohio. I'm getting ready for summer. Lots of sunshine. I'm sure it's the same situation over there in D.C. Well, you got a lot going on there. I know there's protests over at the Supreme Court, some of the residences of the justices. And obviously, there's a lot of Americans that are really concerned about this court in many different ways. I mean, we go back to, what was it, 4 years ago, when the Janus decision came out, and that changed labor law for so, and this was supposedly precedent that was no longer precedent. So what's your thoughts on this court, Josh? Pretty scary. What do you think?
Yeah, it's a very far-right court that really has shown very little sympathy at all to working people. As you mentioned, you know, this whole thing of creating you know, a free rider problem in the public sector unions was created by this court. It's also taken away the health care benefits that were negotiated over the lifetime of a person who earned the retiree health care benefits. There's a lot of things it has done. And I think what the recent news and kind of the recent decisions really point out is that, you know, they do not care about precedent. The new justices, especially, and some of the other ones like Alito, you know, the court has forever operated on the assumption that, you know, you honor previous decisions. This court doesn't feel obliged to do that at all. They also, by the way, don't have a real deference towards agencies, towards experts, towards federal agencies. So, you know, the willingness of this court to overturn major precedent is frightening, and it really just shows to a court that's very much an activist court that's trying to remake the nation. You know, it's great that Justice Jackson is now on the court to create some more balance, but let's be candid, it's still very, very tilted towards the far right anti-worker platform.
And what a rough road it was to get her there, too. That was scary in itself. But that's the political world that we live in today, unfortunately. Well, the world is also gripping with inflation. And this is not an American thing. It's happening all over the world. And I'm sure you got your eye on all of this. What's your thoughts? What was it yesterday? Inflation from a year ago is like 8% higher, something like that, 8.3%.
It's been global, and it's directly related, a result of really the pandemic, which is still going on. We passed, unfortunately, that sad billion person mark as far as known fatalities because of the COVID. But it's wreaked havoc. I mean, for one thing, when you have lockdowns, necessary lockdowns, it just means people can't get to work, which slows down production of goods that are needed all around the world. And since it's so interconnected, you have a stop in one place, it could affect, you know, goods in many, many places all over. So, you know, the supply chain issues, there's also, you know, no question that many corporations have done very, very well during the pandemic and have, you know, higher profits than ever before, and have raised prices considerably, many of them, raised prices considerably during this pandemic. So there's been no question, some folks who've really taken advantage of profit, really profited during this awful period. So, you know, we don't have enough laws on the books about price gouging and things like that. So that's a factor. And of course, the reality is that, people are getting some better wages and they're winning some good contracts and all that, which is great. But it also means there's more money in people's pockets, which, you know, increases demand for goods, because inflation is ultimately too few dollars chasing too many goods. So the supply and demand is just out of control. And that's why prices keep rising. So my point is that this is very much related to the pandemic. And yeah, still the whole thing around, containing this pandemic more, is going to be important for not just here, but around the world. It's going to be really important for, improving these supply chains. And, that will reduce inflation. So, this is a problem that really hits working people bad, obviously. Every time people go to the pump, there's a real sticker shock, and people have it makes your dollars don't go as far. So that's a real, real big problem. But we're looking for solutions and what can be done about it. And one type of solution, too, besides, cleaning up supply chains, which Congress and the administration is trying to do through this COMPETES Act, which hopefully will pass into law and give money to chips and such like that. That will help supply chains, hopefully. Mm-hmm. So we do need that legislation passed. But again, we really do need to still focus on the pandemic because they're interrelated.
Josh, we've been hitting this survey that the AFL-CIO announced about a week ago, and it's real simple. They got flyers. If you go to the AFL-CIO homepage, AFLCIO.org, you could print it out, take it to your local union. Why costs are going up and how do we fix it? And to your point, they mentioned the disrupted supply chains, overseas manufacturing. We got rid of a lot of jobs in the past 20, 30, 40 years. Now those jobs, I mean, look what's going on in China. China's locked down in Shanghai, so we're not getting mm-hmm. products out of there. If we didn't ship so many jobs over there in the first place, we wouldn't be dealing with this right now. And to your point, corporate greed. This blows my mind. Corporate profits are at record highs, and billionaires added
yep.
$2 trillion to their wealth during the pandemic. That's more than the infrastructure bill.
That's an awful lot of zeros.
That's a lot of zeros, exactly. And I got to take a shot at the airlines here. We know gas prices have gone up. In fact, the stats came out yesterday. Energy prices increased by 30%. Food just shy of 10%. Highest inflation in four decades. Airlines, airfares increase at an annual rate of 33.3%. Where did that come from?
it's the same thing, right? It's really just price gouging, so you can get away with it. In many cases. The other thing too is, of course, the Russia's invasion of the war in Ukraine, and
sure.
Ukraine being a major producer, on agriculture. That's really a big, that reduces a lot of supply. And of course, the whole Russia's really invested in the fossil fuels. So, those disruptions too are contributing to this inflation. And I want to remind folks that during the Gulf War, we saw very high gas prices, comparable gas prices. That was many, many years ago. For the same reason, I mean, it's just the fact that when you have, when the supply is not keeping up with the demand, and you have companies being able to get away with some pretty ridiculous things, and you see supply chain problems, you're going to have inflation. But another way to reduce workers' costs is to finally rein in some of these. There's ridiculous price gouging, like prescription drugs, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And the Senate does have an opportunity. The House has done this already. The Senate has an opportunity to actually finally rein in some of these drug prices, make it so things like insulin are affordable, really hope they do it, because this spring and summer is kind of the best chance that we might see in a while for, you know, real relief to be passed to working people. Because as the House, you know, passed Build Back Better, but the Senate, it's not clear what's going to happen from here.
And you can't say insulin is a new drug. It's been around for years. And
oh, my God.
It's ridiculous how much that drug, and so many people rely on that because there's so many people with diabetes in the country today. Yeah, there's a lot of things that can be done. And I'm sure Biden's getting blamed for all the inflation right now. I mean, you're in the middle of it over there in Washington. And that kind of scares me going into the midterms. How do you feel about that, Josh?
Well, I think, it's always, historical trends are not good when it comes to midterms for, sitting president the first term. And yeah, the American public is anxious, and understandably so. But we have to look at, what are solutions that are on the table? What are folks actually trying to do about these problems? I just mentioned some things that could be really done to reduce the costs for people and make it so, not everything is sky high. I'm not hearing a lot of the critics of Biden actually coming. They're blaming him for sure, but I'm not really hearing a vision and ideas about how they would approach it differently.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's very important because, it's easy to point fingers at someone else. It's a lot harder to actually come up to the plate and try to fix something.
Yeah.
So I think we have to be, everybody needs to take a breath and actually just, look at the alternatives.
Yeah. Can we talk solutions here? Yeah. You don't hear that very much. Not at all. All right. A couple minutes left, and I have to bring this up to you. When they had the Build Back Better bill, you and I had many discussions over the months about the tax credit for those who would purchase an electrical vehicle made in the USA by Union Brothers and Sisters. And it was quite significant, like $7,500. Yeah, yeah, that's definitely an eye-opener. Now, Mr. Nasser, is there any progress on that in any way?
Yeah, it's along with the entire package installed in the Senate, but, we are cautiously optimistic that the Senate will revisit it. As far as the whole idea of making sure that, federal dollars, taxpayer dollars are used to create good union jobs, that's something that's needed really across the board. And this EV tax credit's, an important way to do that, but it needs to be a principle that the federal government, state and local governments follow as well. If we're really going to make manufacturing jobs the great jobs that they need to be, and that some places they are not anymore. So, we haven't given up. We're going to keep pushing. There's been no final decisions made on any of it. So we're still in the game. It already did pass the House. It already did pass the Senate Finance Committee, which is a big deal. So I would just say that, things are up for grabs still.
Good.
But this whole principle of tied together, employer responsibility with taxpayer dollars, that is a principle that really needs to be expanded greatly through regulations, other legislation. So this is just the beginning. This isn't an end.
And congratulations. I see the Department of Energy announced an investment of more than $3 billion to build a strong domestic battery supply chain. And obviously that's going to involve some UAW people as well. So we got the right people in Washington. Things are happening. We've got a couple of bumps in the road. We just got to navigate them and get through this whole situation. And I know there's a lot of good things happening. Unfortunately, they're just not getting the media play. That's the sad part about it. Mr. Nasser, we're going to leave it on that note. Josh Nasser, Legislative Director for the United Auto Workers. You can find more at UAW.org, one of the many proud sponsors of this show we call America's Workforce. So you take care. Stay safe, okay?
Thank you. Thanks very much. And thanks to all your listeners out there. I really appreciate it.
All right, that's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up tomorrow, the Central Ohio Building Trades and Labor Attorney Joyce Goldstein on what's happening at the National Labor Relations Board. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening. and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.